the man who made tables. One morning, Wilfred Hyde White woke up with a strong desire to make tables. He called up his boss and he said, "I'm sick." And then he got right to work. But it's not so easy to make tables. Oh, no. And it took Hyde White quite a while, too. He hammered and sawed, bought 4 2x4s, set screws into insets, fitted border to base, and in general it took him all day. It fell apart twice, but the third time it was ready to eat on. Then Hyde White set table to chair and chair to the wall, then climbed up from chair onto table and from table to chair to the heights. In this way, he could test if the table would bear him or not. It could, and it would. Soon he was jumping around on the table like an Indian, jumping on the floor, and then, without even a buy or leave, jumping back on its back with a quick leap. The table would wobble, but hold. Soon Hyde White was racing from room to room, or making circular runs about the room, with the intention of surprising the table in a moment of weakness. It was all in good fun. For another test, Hyde White would heat his plates in the oven, and then, just as the table was expecting him to sit down with legs safely under the forelegs and behave himself, Hyde White would put a hot silver salver on its back. Tricks went on like this for over an hour. He invited 3 of his friends from the office over to see if the table was sturdy enough for 4. He also wanted to see if they liked it. It was, and they did.
"This table is certainly not meant for 1, said one. "It's really quite ample for another, said another. "Big enough, I would say, he said, for a wife and 3 Lidleys. Indeed, said the bird, it's too bad you're still single. How is it you've held out so long?
I don't know why I'm not wed. I doubt a woman would wed a man like myself, said Mr. Hyde White. I'm just a little fellow, but I would like some Lidleys. Pray tell me, how do you go about getting Lidleys?
Oh, they all laughed. The stork brings those. Woohoo, you know.
Conversation went on like that for over an hour. In the morning, Hyde White looked in the want ads. Now, what do you think he found? A stork. There were too many storks, so the zoo would sell one. A pink stork with red legs and blue eyes. So off to the zoo went Hyde White himself in an effort to jew down the price. So he went up to the bars, and what do you think he saw there? A stork. And the stork was looking out between the bars and winking. Oh, I must have this stork, cried Hyde White with utter delight. It had white, long, flowing hair, thin as a Chinaman's beard, and it stamped on a yellow foot. In a nest in the back sat some Lidleys. So Hyde White went up to the zookeeper and said, I'd like one of your storks. So the zookeeper sold one, for there were too many already, and put him in a box with 4 holes at the top, and gave him to Hyde White at once.
He'll give you good service, said the man with a wink.
It's a she, said Hyde White, and with that said, good night.
Well, now Hyde White had someone to eat with, and so he set up 2 chairs at angles of 90 degrees, and they soon got to work on the food. The stork had no manners at first, but it was not long before Hyde White could teach him. And teach her he did. At first, the stork didn't want to sit up at table, but she soon learned you can't eat if you don't sit at table. She was always banging her yellow legs on the chair back, but that was no good, so she soon stopped. The stork had to use her beak, even when steak and souffle were the fare, but Hyde White gave it such a terrible glare that soon there were no snuffles or scrocks. The stork tried to behave herself, but it was hard. She'd never eaten at table before. You'd be surprised how many the rules are for eating at table. The rules seem hard and fast, like a table, but they all break down for a stork. Soon, Hyde White was fast at work making a smaller table for the Lidleys to come. First, the tabletops, shiny and new. Even the knots and the curves could be used. All one had to do was think for a while, and a fine table could be fashioned even out of a freak. It's not so easy as to make tables. Oh, no. It's not so easy to make tables. Each table is different, you see, though each gives the same satisfaction. And each table must bear its own weight, And what's more, one more besides. Hyde-White wanted to spend a good while over each, but no, that's not the way it's done. Each table is pounded together as swift as can be, on hands and knees, with thighs stretched apart, feet extended, neck distended, one hand for support, so it's finished just right. Then there is pounding, thousands and thousands of times, but not too hard, for whole days and nights, till even the head wants to join in. Finally, another was done, a smaller table for smaller Hyde-Whites of his own, and he said to himself, "Here is my table, which I have wrested from the refractory wood with hammer and claw, with pounding and hammering blows, my table which can never belong to anyone else. And I now pass peacefully many hours which suit me well here, where one can stretch oneself in comfort, one's head in his hands, and one's arms lying along the bed's edge. To possess a table like mine is to possess a roof over your head and a raft in case of flood. Here I can feast the feast of satisfied desire, of achieved ambition, for I possess a table. Here the joy of my objective, the perfect central table." Now it was nice to stay home from the bank with a stork to watch from the window, the passers-by, or the sky, on one side Hyde-White, on the other the stork. Sometimes Hyde-White still went out, as if to the bank, but only to impress the stork, and when he returned, returned with head bent and looking up from a stoop. When he was gone all day, Hyde-White could see from the start the stork had had a terrible day. For a stork can be painfully awkward in such a small room as Hyde-White's. He was always stepping on the ottoman, making a light leap and stepping right into the commode, or the peapot. It would often sail right into the wall, or come flopping down against the door, which, strange for the stork, did not give way in the least. It often did its toilet before Hyde-White got up in the mornings, and often it was that Hyde-White would surprise the stork, flapping its wings and squawking because it had got its nice yellow leg caught in the commode. Hyde-White would wipe it, and without a word, whisk it into the kitchen for breakfast. Many a time the stork would jump up on the mattress when Hyde-White was gone, pull at the buttons and tear it to shreds. And it's not so merry to come home and discover a stork tearing your bed to pieces. Oh, no. And it made Hyde-White quite angry, too. Soon Hyde-White learned to forego supper a while and take the stork out for a walk. One day he met his boss, and his boss said, "What are you doing out in the street with a stork?" "The stork," said Hyde-White, merrily, "gets restless, and needs a walk now and then." And with that, they bid him adieu. When Hyde-White was away all day, the stork spent its day practicing getting into its chair at table and then getting down without falling down. Or it would sit by the window and look out at the sky. Or if it was snowing, as it usually was, the snow. The stork would look down on the derbies below, and soon it was safe to say it knew a derby by heart. It certainly knew Hyde-White's derby by heart. And when he would appear at the door, the stork would flap its wings till the dust rose, and Hyde-White would shout, "Don't!" Or when Hyde-White looked around on table and chairs, he could see an hour of cleaning to do. "Don't drop your droppings on my table, you hear? Leave that alone, at least. I have nothing else." And he hit the stork's beak with his hand. That night at dinner, and all through the night, the stork snuffled and cried. Hyde-White knew it was hurt. But what could he do? He had to show he was a man. Next day, for a gift, Hyde-White brought home a stick he had made while walking about. He had the stork jump over the stick at 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 feet. And the stork jumped over the stick without even a stop for breath. Then Hyde-White put the stick between his legs, said, "No more," sat down and took up the Evening Times. "I'll use it for my cane as well," said Hyde-White. But the stork was in for more fun. It was nudging the Times from out of his hands, and it pushed its long beak into place. Hyde-White soothed the stork's head with his hand once or twice, and the stork pretended to sleep. Hyde-White felt the stork in between his two legs, but he never thought of the trick. Just then the stork woke and yanked out the stick, and with flip-flop was off on blue wings. Up jumped the betricked with an unholy gasp and went after the stork in a rage. "It's my cane as well as your stick," cried Hyde-White, and he ran round the room in a frenzy.
He yanked and pulled, rolled up his times and took to wild swats, but never recovered his cane. Flapping its wings round the room with a will, the stork almost chortled with glee. Prancing aimlessly from room to room, with a stick in its beak like a fish, the show-off preened its white down. But it was stuck for a partner, for Hyde-White was pouting, so hid the stick under the rug. When it got time for sleep, they made up, for Hyde-White, of course, could not sleep, and he wanted to keep the stork up all night to play. The night was a long one for Hyde-White, and only the coming of the stork made it short. Hyde-White and the stork played patty cake, ate cookies in bed, played the radio but did not listen to it, stood on their heads, wrapped themselves in sheets, and pretended to be Rosicrucians. The stork would croon a homely tune through its throat while Hyde-White would sit and listen. Then Hyde-White would do card tricks while the stork watched with beak open, flapping its wings back and forth at the end. But around morning, the stork fell asleep, and Hyde-White was left alone.